Hello and welcome to episode 129 of Yawgmoth Soap Opera, the vintage-related podcast for Utah community. Yawgmoth Makeover Part 4. I'm Andy, a.k.a. Montolio, and I'm joined by my regular co-hosts this week, Josh, a.k.a. Cronin, and Zach, Abstract66. And of course, we've got another special guest with us, a fellow clanmate, Adrian Becker, also known online as Backguds, who is the vintage innovator of the decks Applejacks and Affinity in Vintage, who's here to talk some vintage with us this week. Welcome, Adrian.
Hi, great to be here.
How are you guys doing this week?
I'm excited.
Wonderful.
Hey, dude, we're getting really, really close to vintage. I was having a terrible day today, and one of my friends sent me a private message, and I was like, dude, I don't give a crap right now. But then I thought about it after I got home from work, and I was like, wow, he's right. 8 days. 8 days.
8 days.
It's crazy.
Oh, man, that's so close.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Saying goodbye to an old friend and classic and welcoming in something we've been waiting for a very long time in vintage. It's long overdue.
Well,
we generally record on Thursday, and when you think that the next time we record is going to be the day before vintage comes out online.
Holy freaking catfish.
Dude, we're going to be giddy little school children next week. I'll tell you that right now. But!
Does it come out at noon or when?
I don't.
You know?
Wizards, there will probably be a problem with the servers, and it'll take 4 hours before it actually starts.
They'll crash.
Right. So
is there a Friday downtime?
Plan on it.
Plan on a Friday downtime.
Just Saturday.
Right here.
We'll be playing vintage.
We will play vintage before the weekend's done. They're not going to let that cash cow be down all weekend. So, but yeah, hey, you know what? This week with Adrian on, I don't think we could have a better guest. He is one of the few people who can claim and prove to be proficient in both the major formats that we deal with previously in Classic, and now in the future we're moving to Vintage, and Adrian's pretty damn good at both. So it's great to have you on the show today, man.
Great to be here.
What are you guys thinking here? Have you heard the last 3-4 casts we've done with the other vintage aficionados? What do you think? Is everybody pretty on point with the power coming online from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's on point about you know the level of excitement that's going to be there. I've seen a lot of discussion and heard a lot of discussion about the price of power being all over the place. And, you know, I think that'll still settle down as the releases come and the greedy little bastards are trying to get $300 for their mocks in the first few days of release. And then we'll see the real prices start to kick in after a week or so. So
you're going to settle in, Adrian. Where do you think prices will settle in after the first couple weeks? Like, what's power going to be going for?
If I had to guess, I think low-end power, like Time Twister, is going to be around 20 ticks, I'd say, you know, Pearl, Emerald, and Ruby from 30 to 50 ticks. And then we've got Jet, Sapphire, Walk, and Recall around 80 maybe. Maybe Jet a little less than that. And I think Lotus will be about 150. Those are my guesses.
Yeah, it sounds pretty reasonable to me. And what about foils? Any thoughts on where these things are going to lie?
I don't see how we can. I mean, we don't. So there's one thing I know about, you know, foil distributions from other sets, from standard sets, is that the ratios of rares to mythics to commons to uncommons are similar to what they are in you know, is their non-foil versions, but they're also, you know, they are different. So the it's not an exact ratio of, you know, of uncommons to rares that you have in that you'd find in a pack in regular that you get in foil. So I really don't know what the rate of foils for Power 9 are going to be. If they're, you know, I could see them being anywhere from, you know, a couple hundred dollars to a grand, depending just on how rare they are. And I think we'll see. You know, I don't think that there are enough players online who are foil nuts and vintage nuts that we can support, you know, high triple digit foil power prices if we're getting a reasonable number of foil, a reasonable amount of foil power. So, for example, if foil power is twice as rare as a typical foil mythic, I think there will be a lot of foil power out there relative to the mythics that you see for things like standard sets, because you're not having things like the redemption effect, which really takes out most of the mythics or a large portion of the mythics from the online supply chain that you have for standard sets. You don't see that in vintage masters.
In addition to that, too, these cards are going to be, they're all restricted. So, I mean, there's only, you know, versus other mythics where people may be playing four of them or something like that. I mean, when you're dealing with a restricted card, there's going to be more of them, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, if somebody pulled my arm and I'd had to guess, I'd say Foil Lotus is probably around, 400 maybe, and the other foil powers in the 100 to 200 range. But I think there's no way to guess right now until we start seeing the numbers come in.
Yeah, agree. I think in the beginning it's going to be, very few people are going to be buying the foil power because everybody's going to be, for lack of a better term, greedy that has them and trying to reach for the sky because they're obviously extremely rare in the first couple of days. So once things settle down, I'm hoping your price points are right. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
So let me give you guys another scenario and something you can compare this to. totally different scale and a totally different level. But what about Mox releases? So like when a Mox promo comes out, what you find, and I think and the reason I bring this up is because it's going to be comparable in one sense. People like us and the guys who've been super anxious about Vintage, at least the guys I know, have been like stocking tickets and getting ready and like they're boom, boom, boom. They're ready to spend their money. They're ready to get that power. And I know me, just like I know you guys, it's going to be super hard for me not to play with power right away. I'm not going to do it. I've already like convinced myself it's not going to happen. I'm not going to have it for a while. I'm going to draft it all like a freaking man. But the one thing that's freaking me out, and this is where I think like the guys who are like saying, oh, $200 for everything are crazy. Mox promos, when they come out, are ridiculously expensive. Like, the few hours they come out, when everyone has money and they've been waiting all month to get this very special version of this card they love. I sold my Bayou this month within the first 5 minutes to Card Buying Bot, of all people, and I got $35 for it. Now, the next day...
It's around 20 now, right?
Dude, the next day it was like $14. I mean, it was ridiculous how fast the card dropped. And like I told my friends, like my other guys who got the Mox promos, like my friend David, and I was like, yeah, I sold it. And he's like, what? How'd you get $35 for it? I'm like, I just did it right away. Well, when everyone's ready to buy right away, I think you're going to see the same dynamic with Vintage Masters when it's released. It's going to be like one of those things where, hey, you know, all these people are ready to spend money. And then the first day, there aren't going to be enough packs opened, right? But given 5 days of people like just seeing these ads buying for 200 or whatever it is, when the idea is out there that they're super valuable, hard to attain cards, dude, do you guys remember Zendikar? When the paper versions had the treasures?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they did that online?
That'd be crazy.
It would have been insane. Like you have one place.
Another example is I remember when Med 4 came out. My first draft, I picked a library, and I sold that library for 70 tickets.
Nice. You
know? So
yeah, my first one, I picked a foil library.
Nice. But, you know, that's the thing. You've got, I agree with you, Zach. You've got a lot of people who, especially the first couple of days, are going to be demanding high prices. And, you know, that's legitimate. If you're the only guy, you know, or you're one of the only 10 people right now that owns a Lotus online, of course you can ask a ridiculous price and you might get somebody to bite. But I think after a week or so, we'll see it start to die down. And, you know, frankly, if it doesn't, there are going to be people like me who are just going to say, screw it, and buy a bunch of packs on the secondary market and crack them because there's so much value in that set that's going to be coming out that you just can't support these ridiculously high prices of power.
Now,
I mean, if power on average is like $200, you've got $1,800 tied up in power. That's about 60% of the price probably of buying that many packs on the secondary market.
Right. Well, let's round real quick. Right. Let's say you have seven each pack $7. Right. And let's just round down a little bit. What? What is it?
Yeah, I think PAX will probably be selling around 550 on the secondary market, I would imagine.
Right, right. Well, I'm even talking about from the store. Like, if you just went and directly bought it right now from the store, day one. This is the one thing I'm thinking, and this is why the $200 just doesn't make sense, even at the price of the boosters, right? Let's say you round it down and say you open power once in every 50 packs. I'd be honest, I mean, it'd be really hard-pressed if I bought 50 packs not to get power. I'd be pretty freaking mad that, you know, I'm 3 packs away. You know, let's just round down and say 50 packs. You got $7 a pack times 50 pack, that's $350, right? If a piece of power is $200, and you're telling me you're going to get 49 random rares for $150 from this set, when the packs are $7 each, that seems like an amazing good deal.
Yeah, like, I mean, five of those 50 rares you get are going to be dual lands, too.
So. Right, and one might be a Force of Will, and, you know, you might get a Mana Drain.
Diamond or...
That's why, like, when people are overhyping the crap out of the price of these, and one way I get really angry because, like, the people who are casual and on the fence, they might not go in there. And another way I get really happy because I'm like, well, awesome. Maybe I'll find some freaking sweet fishies in my draft queues. Because everyone will play.
Like, just to go back to the foils for a second and play devil's advocate here, because I've seen this situation on two different times and having collected foils. But, you know, I remember when we were sitting back here discussing Mass Block, you know, a couple of years ago when it was coming out and talking about the foils there and what they were going to cost. And, of course, we were way, way off by many hundreds of dollars for things like Tangle Wires and Rashidden Ports. And that is one example. When those foils were first released, I think it's a given, right? When a set first comes out, the cards are most expensive during that time because there's not that many cards. But inversely, looking at something like Mass Block, the cards were actually fairly reasonable for some of those foils. Looking back, like, I mean, I remember picking up, you know, my first couple Tangle Wires and Ports at a very reasonable price and compared to where they got and currently are.
Give me reasonable.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I paid for my ports. I think I paid my first two ports. I paid $100 each, and I think I paid $125 for my first two Tangle Wires. You know, I was paying like $15 for my foil dazes, and you know, at the time it seemed ridiculous that I was
scammer
that money. But of course, it wasn't all that long until we saw Tangle Wires up at $500-$600 foil Tangle Wires, and I mean, who even knows where a foil port is worth now? There, you just can't find them.
I think that's you know, something that's specific to Mass Block, just in how terrible it is and how little value there is in the set. It's just concentrated around, you know, these five cards or so that are valuable. You know, a counterexample to that is actually when I started seriously foiling was around the release of Met 4, and I kind of went back crazy, you know, probably about a week or so into release and just bought all the foils. And I definitely overspent on things like, you know, workshop. I paid like $100 for each workshop. And then later on, they were, of course, cheaper than that. Same with time vaults and soul rings and everything, you know. So and that's an example of a set that I'd say is more comparable to Vintage Masters in that it has a lot more interesting cards and a lot more cards that will at least hold some value and have foils that will hold some value. And I mean,
agreed.
You're getting a foil in each pack here, right? And you're going to be pulling like Foil Gush now, at least from Vintage Masters, is going to be super cheap, I think.
Well, let me say this too. This is a caveat.
Is Gush in?
Yeah.
And every one of these powers going to be in what slot?
Foil slot.
Right. And they were saying that the chances of foil power is actually much higher than another card that could just be a foil card, because it's always going to be in that slot, right?
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
They were saying that the probabilities for the foils to be for the power to be foil will be much higher than it will be a random card. I got to figure out where the hell I read that.
Yeah,
not
that would
much
be
higher, but it'll be higher.
Yeah, I could see that, because, I mean, you've got how many cards are in the set? Like 220 something?
It's like 100 plus 40 plus 80 plus 100, something like that.
So like 320.
So you've only got 9 power cards versus that many other cards in the slot, you know, and you've got like around 80 commons and 60 uncommons.
You know what I'd be really interested in is what the actual percentage of, like, what, you know, because any card could be a foil, right? We know what the percentage of just a power card being there is going to be one in every 53 packs. But when you have a foil power, does it count against that one in 53 packs, or does it count as a random foil? Does that make sense, the way I'm phrasing that?
Yeah, I mean, and that's getting back to what I was trying to say earlier, is we just don't know what the odds are on the foil power.
I think they said
you can't have both a foil piece of power and a regular piece of power in the same pack, so I think we do know that.
Yeah, but we don't know how often they appear. You know, we don't even know, for instance, how often you'll get a foil rare versus a foil uncommon or common, or a foil mythic. And I know a lot of people were surprised by Modern Masters when they actually released. So if you look back at the first Modern Masters Vegas GP article, WotC did this thing, like they calculated how many packs there were, and they told you how many foil mythics were open. So how many foil Tarmogoyfs were open, and like how many, and you knew how many foils were open. And it turned out that foil mythics appear, you know, more often than just being, let's see, twice. So they're twice as rare as a rare, six times as rare as an uncommon. So there's something like, if it was a regular pack distribution, the distribution of commons to mythics would be something like, I think 15 to 1 or 11 to 1. And it wasn't quite that rare. So there are less than 11 of each common foil for each foil Goyf or something like that.
I mean, isn't that crazy? What if it's like that with power? Like, what if they're doing something sneaky on this front because they know how much paper players like bling? What if one in every four pieces of power is foil?
I'd be happy with that.
What if one in every eight, okay? Let's make it more realistic. One in every 16. Any of those numbers would be amazing, rather than the, what is the normal one in every 82? I don't remember exactly what it was. But, like, of any given card, you have X foils or X regulars to one foil. But do you guys know that number?
My guess would be they're about twice as rare as a foil mythic in the set. And a foil mythic is about twice as, you know, a particular foil mythic is twice as rare as a particular foil rare. And then, so the problem then is you've got 100 rares in the set and you've got 30 mythics. So you've got a lot of rares, a lot of mythics, but very few uncommons and commons relative. I mean, there are less uncommons than rares and less commons than rares. So I don't know what the ratio of, like, commons to uncommons to rares is going to be in the foil slot, and therefore how common mythics and power will be at foil.
Yeah, still a lot of unknowns to answer all these questions for sure. I'm hoping there's lots out there, though.
Right.
I'll draft them.
You and me both.
Well, Adrian, this is kind of a perfect segue here to one of the questions we wanted to ask you, which is, you know, being kind of the rare breed, one of the guys who gets to play paper vintage and is very integrated into the classic online community, what do you think about the two formats, and can you kind of give us some of your synopses of the differences and similarities between the two, and what makes them different, and what we should be excited about?
Sure. You know, I think the online classic community is a very dedicated community, as is the paper vintage community. One marked difference I think I noticed both comparing classic and vintage is that, you know, classic players, even though classic events aren't firing that frequently, they're able to play classic matches much more frequently than your typical vintage player is. And they're able to test out a lot of different theories, and they don't have a high opportunity cost to testing those theories. And what I mean by that is, for instance, a paper vintage player, you know, your typical paper vintage player might go and play in one or two events every 3 months, and there's a high cost for them to design, you know, kind of step outside the box, try something new, and metagame effectively when this is one of their only, you know, two chances every 3 months or six times a year to play in a real vintage tournament. So it's hard for them to do that. Whereas in Classic, you've got a lot of matches happening continuously, both in the tournament practice room and through the Classic Quarter invitationals and invitational qualifiers. You've just got a lot more innovation. And the formats, I mean, of course, they're very different. You know, missing those nine cards are the most important nine cards you'd be missing. But a lot of the same archetypes exist, at least as major archetypes. You know, you've got Oath, you've got your tempo decks, you've got Bug and Rug, you've got all the Shops decks, you've even got Thumbstorm, you've got Dredge, you've got all the major archetypes. But again, in Classic, you see a lot more, you see much more frequent innovation, I'd say, than you see in Vintage. That's not to say that you don't see innovation in Vintage. You know, you've got a lot, a lot that's come out in the past few years. But again, it's a handful of innovative decks that have become successful. You know, you've got things like Humans, you've got things like Blue Angels, Affinity,
Applejack.
Well, I don't know if I'd count that in that caliber yet, but you've got very few innovative decks that can really that do well in major tournaments. Whereas if you look at the finals and the top eight of the Classic qualifiers and the Classic invitationals, you'll see a lot more innovative decks by people like Scorpio and all you guys, you know, playing different innovative decks and doing well. And I think Andy doesn't innovate that much, but he still ends up doing well. You know, I think a lot of that, that creativity will, realize itself in Vintage when it's online, and that's actually the thing I'm most excited for, because you'll have not only the Classic players who are used to playing a lot of matches and being able to innovate, but now you're going to open it up to all these experienced Vintage players who have been out there and, you know, now can play continuously and can play any time of the day and test out new ideas. They can actually run gauntlets. I mean, it's amazing. Like, you know, in Classic, like in the clan, if you want, you know, to run a gauntlet with a teammate or with a clanmate, that's easy for us to do in Classic, and we do that sometimes. Whereas in Vintage, it's a huge deal for you to actually get together and run a gauntlet with a deck. And, you know, some people do it, but it's still a lot more infrequent than it will be when it's online. And I think that's the kind of innovation that's the basically culture that will arise online, and we'll see a lot of innovation from that. And so it's very exciting.
So do you think that in turn is going to help the community to thrive?
I do. I hope so. I think that, you know, we're getting a lot of attention, in Vintage, and now it's not kind of the stepchild format that was shunned like Classic was. And we're going to have a bigger community come online. We're going to start to have, you know, articles on Daily MTG. We'll start to have non-Vintage and non-Classic forums starting to talk more about Vintage and getting a lot of people excited about Vintage. I mean, I think we've already seen that, and I've seen that locally at our events in Boston. Vintage interest has picked up quite a bit in the past several months, and I think, you know, not a small part of that is due to Vintage coming online. So I think we are going to be able to grow a much, you know, broader community as Vintage opens up.
So are people talking about coming online in the stores when you go in there?
Yeah, people are talking about coming online. People are talking about, you know, slowly buying into paper. Both ways, you know, I think that if you look at the existing Vintage community, you know, I'd say there's a high interest, but it's not a universal interest in playing online. But I think more than that, we're also going to have people who, you know, aren't paper vintage players joining the vintage community online, and hopefully that can help grow the paper vintage community. You know, it's going to be relatively when Vintage Masters is released, since you've got so many staples in Vintage Masters, you'll be able to buy into vintage relatively cheap during this period of time. I mean, sure, it's still going to cost you a grand or so at least if you want to be able to build everything. But if you want to build a bug deck, or you want to build Dredge, or even if you want to build a Shops deck, you're going to be able to do that for a reasonable investment at this time. And I think we're going to see a lot of paper players do that, and then start to seek out the proxy events that are in their, in their local communities. Now, it will be easier for those people in big cities than out in the boonies. But I think we'll see some growth coming from Vintage Online in the paper world as well.
Interesting. So you think it's going to work on both ends then?
Yep, definitely. I think that that it's going to be a healthy time, and I'm hoping that WotC puts some of its marketing muscle behind it, and really gets behind doing vintage articles on the mothership and promoting vintage events.
You just popped something into my conscience here, and I want you guys to really pontificate on this and tell me your thoughts, because what about what nobody's really talked about? You talk about growing the community and, you know, talking about writing about it on Daily MTG. And here's the real question. Unlike Force of will power be shunned in casual?
I don't know. I mean, like, if you're playing your white weenie deck and you put a Mock Troll in it, yeah, some people are probably going to snap concede, but others are, probably
the reason
just
going to
look at it and say, why is this card... The people who don't are the ones that look at it and say, this is just an expensive land, you know?
But if you're in casual and you're playing a game of Magic and you join a vintage queue, I mean, you've got to be crazy to think you're going into a vintage queue and you're not going to see one of those power.
But yeah, okay, so... That's the difference. You can join a legacy queue in casual room, and all you're expecting to see is maybe soldiers and goblins, right? Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is from like a third-person perspective. I used to only play casual. My first like 2-3 years online, I was a bully. I played in the casual room, and I made awesome decks, and I beat the crap out of people. I tried to piss them off. That was the whole reason I played Magic. But,
oh, you? Really?
I know. It's hard to believe. But now, I couldn't imagine playing casual because there's nothing to gain from it. But if you guys look at the numbers of the people who are online, the vast majority is casual.
Yeah, and I think that, the vast majority of casual events now are playing with older cards. They're not legacy events. They're people playing classic, even though they're playing legacy legal decks. And you'll probably have the same thing happen with vintage. And some of them may have power, some of them won't. I don't know. I think it'll be exciting. I think that, it's more likely, I would say, for the casual Magic player who, opens a Mox Pearl or opens a Mox Ruby to start to get excited about vintage and maybe think about going, not necessarily more, I mean, it is going more competitively, but not necessarily having to go into vintage events, but maybe make their way into the TP room and buy some, buy into a deck, because it's not going to be that expensive at the time. You'll we're going to have $5 dual lands in the next, 2-3 weeks. So I think it's going to be the...
You mean like Plateau and Badlands?
Yeah, I think the cheaper ones are going to be 3 to 5, and Underground Sea is going to be like 12.
Just because the packs are $7, I don't see any duel ever going below $5. even Plateau, even Crapto. Well, okay, Plateau might be the one outlier, but like Badlands and Taiga, I mean, they're still dual lands. People still.
I think that Plateau will be 3 to 5. I think that Savannah will be in. I think Savannah, Badlands, and Taiga will be in the 5 to 10 range. And then I think Bayou's going to be 10, Trap's going to be 10, Bulk's going to be 10, and Underground Sea's going to be 12.
Wow. And Tundra?
And Tundra will be around 10, yeah. I really don't see them holding higher prices. I mean, that's what they were back when ME4 was out.
Yeah,
and
but Tundra wasn't $60 and being played in every single good blue light deck.
Yes, it was. Tundra was a $60 card before it was spoiled in ME4.
Oh, no. What? Tundra never got to 60, did it?
Yes, it did.
No.
I guarantee you. Yeah. The prices were almost the same as they are now. I'm almost positive. Pre-ME4 spoilers.
Okay. I'm looking at... Do you remember when ME4 came out?
It came out...
3 years ago, right?
Right at the end of the year, right, is when it came out?
Came out in December.
How far back can I go on this? It only goes to freaking...
December 2011, was it?
Master's Edition 4... came out January 10th, 2011.
January 10th, 2011.
Oh, yeah, because it was coming out in December, and then they delayed it. Does MTGO, does Goldfish go back that far for
data?
That's
what I'm looking for. I'm right, it doesn't, let's see. No, see, that doesn't. I don't know. I'm going to look and see. That just, let's put it this way. Underground Sea, I wouldn't bat my eyes. I think it got that high. But Tundra was never, like, up there. It was never like it is now. It blew. When I saw it was $60, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, why? Then I was like, oh, UW Miracles is just...
Well, because everybody... I mean, the only deck people play online is Miracles, right? That's like Tundra's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see.
Here we go. January 2011. Oh, it doesn't go back that far. So, like, yeah, that's just so you can see, like, it's already at 30 and with already in a huge dip at the very first of Goldfish's data, which is January of 2011.
Right.
And it was spoiled, if you remember, it was spoiled at the beginning of December because they were supposed to release, Modern Masters 4 on December 15th or something of the previous year, and then they delayed it.
Oh, I just wish we could see the cost. Let's see.
Probably if you send an email to Heath or something, he can tell you.
Ooh. What's this? Oh, no. I don't know. I'll keep looking. But yeah, it's definitely interested to see, you know, I don't disagree with your pricing as much after I heard it. I just thought you were saying that all the duels are going to be $3 to $5. But yeah, look, I could see that. I could see the low ones dipping that low. I don't see Tundra or Underground Sea going under 15 this time, just because it's almost like people should know their lesson by now. Like, it doesn't matter how many times it gets reprinted, it's a freaking dual land. Especially bots. I mean, I think bots would be the number one reason why that would be, like, hard to do again. But, you know, you never know. I mean, you could be right. Maybe everything just dips.
I mean, there are only so many tickets. There's only so much capital out there that the bots have. You know, you can't have, you know, 20. You can't have all these $20 dual lands and $200 powers and you know, $30 Mistress Workshops. There's going to be too much value in the set for all these prices to be supported.
Yeah, definitely in the initial release, for sure. I think power is going to be the number one, like, cost sink, and I do think everything else is going to fall off a cliff at first, but it's going to go back up. Like, that's the reason I haven't sold my promo Force of Wills. I know eventually, even if it's going to be, like, a year from now when VMA is offline, they're going to go back up. They will go back up. I guarantee you, at some point, people are going to be like, crap, I need Force of Wills. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think
I think Force is probably going to be around 20 when Vintage is at. It's already 30 now, right? Something like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's going down more. I'm not saying it's going to, like, go up immediately. But what I mean is, over time, it'll definitely regulate. It'll be over 40 again very
unless they start, if they keep rotating through promos and doing, if they commit to 10 out of every 12 months giving Duelian promos, they might never recover. And, Force of Will and Wasteland is the other two. There's no reason they couldn't keep doing that year after year.
Yeah, so, I agree with
and,
you.
And have bring the back, same drive
and
for
bring
them.
Back Modern Masters drafts and bring back, not Modern Masters, Vintage Masters drafts, or have Vintage Masters 2.
Yeah, but it's like Modern Masters. You bring it for a week and it won't have any effect on the prices a week and a half later.
Yeah, maybe.
Sadly, I wish, some of the sets for
Mythic,
do.
For Mythics and Power, that might be true, but not for Rares, I don't think.
Okay.
Modern Masters Rares are, like, free now, aren't they? Like, there's...
Are you serious? Like, have you seen Blood Moon and Cryptic Command?
How much is Blood Moon online now?
It's ridiculous. I was tempted to sell mine the other day. Let me look. Right now, they're buying for $15 with none in stock. A regular.
Yeah, so but that's the thing. You've got, three rares over buying for over $10, right? Or two. Mm-hmm. No, only one.
But then you have these rares down the list, like these ones for $1. Dude,
yeah.
Josh, you drafted MMA a ton with me. How late could you have gotten Glimmer Voids if you wanted them?
Yeah, you could get that random crap.
I mean, you could get... into
packs.
You could get a playset of Glimmer Voids in a week, guaranteed, just like casually drafting and grabbing them when you see them. Blood Moon is the craziest example because it's the one card that, it dropped. It tanked. It was like no one was buying it. If they were, it was like 75 cents. And I was like, well, what the hell, dude? This is a card every deck plays. It's the only true black border version online. Why aren't people... and obviously now, look... some of the stuff's crazy.
I agree. Well, this set's going to have more value than Modern Masters, though.
Oh. It'll be interesting. You've got like a 20% chance of getting a card that is worth over $30 now, right? Something like that.
Holy.
Is that really true?
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
1 in 5.
Because you've got, well, the 10, not 30. What's the cheapest duel at now?
Cheapest duel?
Well,
yeah.
Only blue duels are still expensive.
Yeah.
Because they've reprinted so many of those. Like Savannah's worthless now, and Plateau's worthless, and Bayou's worthless. And...
Yeah, so ME4. Here's the buy prices on a major bot here. Tundra, 27.4. Bayou, 17.1. This is the biggest, craziest one. Is Underground Sea is $16. Bayou, 17. Volcanic, 16. Underground, 16. Tropical, 13. Maze of Ith, 12. That's not getting reprinted, is it? Surprised that it's that low. Badlands, Taiga, 8 and 7. Hey, there. Yeah, they're pretty cheap right now, man. I didn't even know they were that low. That's insane. It's kind of sad.
I told you, man. They killed them, which is fine. People need them.
They'll come back.
They'll be back.
Yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be cool to see what happens here.
Well, Adrian, I do want to talk to you about this Applejacks deck you've been playing.
Sure.
And you top eighted qualifier for the next
top eighted. So I've been playing it for a while now. I've done well in some weekly local events, and then top eighted the Boston NYSE qualifier for it. I also took it down to an invitational at Top Deck Games in New Jersey, and didn't do too well there. Ended up 3-3, but it's an interesting deck. It's a fun deck. I think it's It's got a lot of interactions that you know, work good in specific matchups, and you're able to exploit those. It's similar to, I think of it being similar to Affinity in that it's a deck with some very powerful disruptive elements that creates create a tempo loss for your opponent. But unlike other decks that rely on those elements, it's able to quickly capitalize on them. So you look at, you know, Affinity with Lodestone and Tanglewire, and Applejacks with Magus and the Moon and Null Rod. You've got these decks that have these very powerful, very disruptive spells, but you're not trying to lock the opponent out. You're just trying to buy a turn or two, but that's all you really need with the power level of the creatures that you can attack with and the other cards in your deck. So, you know, it's fine if the Magus is only buying you a turn or two, or the Null Rod's only buying you a turn or two, because the Lumberjack is giving you a Black Lotus every turn to cast a Fatty. And the Survival is giving you a toolbox to be disruptive to everyone else out there. So I think it's a very fun deck. It's actually the deck that I will be playing in Vintage events for the first couple weeks of Modern Masters release, because I think it has a very powerful unpowered version. So I'm going to wait on getting my power for a little bit and play an unpowered version of the deck.
Planet Wall special.
Yeah, so unlike other unpowered decks that rely on Null Rod, you know, it's not trying to dirtle you down with 2/2s, it's trying to dirtle you down with 8/8s, so that it can cast on turn 2. So it's a little bit faster, and it can, you know, it's in the two of the worst colors of mana, but they're also the two fastest colors of mana for an unpowered deck, because you've got Spirit Guides. So, you know, I think it'll be a fun little experiment for me to play the first couple of weeks. And, you know, I haven't had the balls yet to play an unpowered version of it in a Vintage event, because, you know, that's the opportunity cost for me, like I was talking about before. You know, I'm not going to waste one of my experiences at a Vintage event in paper playing an unpowered version.
Well, why would you play unpowered when you have power, though? That's the thing, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to wait on, I think the first week or so, power prices are going to be, you know, people asking too much. And, you know, for the events that are firing then and the games in the TP room, I'll be playing unpowered. So we'll see. But and then just to troll, of course, probably a few weeks after I have power, I'll be playing the unpowered version.
So do you know how many people you're going to be up against in the event? Did they have these qualifiers last time?
Yeah, they had the qualifiers are just the qualifiers just get you free entry. They're open events. So the NYSC is an open event as well. You know, last year I think there are around 80 people, maybe. It was either 68 or, you know, somewhere around 70 or 80. And I think turnout's going to be similar this year. But it's an open event, so I'd assume, you know, a similar crowd. The Invitational that I went to had around 50 people, and it was basically, you know, you qualified if you top 16 the NYSE the previous year or played in some of the New York, did well in some of the New York events. But I was down in the New York or Pennsylvania area event. So I was down in Pennsylvania to visit my in-laws during Memorial Day weekend, and it was a convenient excuse to get out of the day. You know, visiting with them to go play in the Magic tournament in Lancaster. That was fun. But you know, I think if you look at the two decks that I've gotten the most coverage for, Affinity and this list, I think Affinity is definitely a better deck. But I think this one is
a very fun deck to play, and I think it's powerful enough to be able to do well in big tournaments. And you know, I hope to do that. Knock on wood, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think Affinity is probably the better deck. I think your microphone's cutting out a little bit, but it's an interesting deck, and I'll look forward to seeing. I hope they have some video coverage of the NYSE this year.
Yeah, I think they will. There's been a lot of talk about it.
Well, I hope these people are listening to you trying to convince them all to play Balance.
I have gotten Balance. So, I in the qualifier that I top-8ed, I had a very interesting match against a blue-white control deck playing for top 8, and I got 6-1 with a supreme verdict.
Oh,
but I still managed to take that one down.
Awesome.
So it was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's a beating, 6-1.
I mean,
that's
the thing. You've got fatties like Colonian Hydra, which just beat face, but they're vulnerable to swords. And then you've got things like, you know, Stormbreath Dragon. You look at a deck like Blue Angels, it really just cannot beat a Stormbreath Dragon once you resolve it. There's nothing you can do. And especially these ones now that are playing with the Spirit of the Labyrinth, so they're playing Factor Fiction instead of Jace. You know, they can't even Jace bounce your Stormbreath encounter when it comes back down. So if you land one of those, you know, they're pretty easy to monstrous, and there's not much they can do.
Yeah, it laughs at Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty common removal spell in Vintage. So it's, yeah, that's one of the cards, having played this deck quite a bit. It's Stormbreath Dragon is the one that impresses me the most. It's pretty awesome once you get it on the table.
Laughs. Serves those people right.
Yeah, I'd say the worst matchup would probably be the GG Oath decks, you know, with Emrakul and Dragon's Breath. And you see a lot of those in Classic, so I would assume this deck is pretty terrible in Classic. I haven't actually played it in Classic. But in Vintage, almost all of the decks are Oath decks or Gristlebrand decks. And the matchups have been fairly favorable because typically, you know, if you've got a Null Rod or you've got a Magus of the Moon, you know, you'll get the turn back after they oath up a Gristlebrand. And between, you know, being able to cast, so you'll have usually enough mana to cast a threat and cast one or two, you know, two effects like Phantasmal Image or Gilded Drake, and you'll be the one with the Gristlebrand. So it's those oath matches have been pretty favorable so far, but I would be concerned about the GG Oath decks.
Yeah, I've played against a couple good game decks on Modo with it, and yeah, game one you're cooked if they resolve an oath on you. The only way I've been able to beat them game one is with a Magus down before they've actually been able to get an oath out, because Magus really messes with the typical mana base that good game oath is running. But yeah, post board you've got the Gilded Drake's pretty good. I stole a Blightsteel once with it. It felt pretty good.
What about Dredge, dude?
I'm sorry?
What about Dredge matchup?
You go and you search up your scavenging ooze.
Yeah, so Dredge, you've got scavenging ooze. So you've got, and the thing is, like, that's why you've got an extra scavenging ooze in the board. You know, you can really power out scavenging ooze with Lumberjack. You know, just sack a land, eat three or four cards. And you've got the cages. So really, you know, you've got Cage, which is a powerful, again, it's just a roadblock for Dredge, right? They're still filling up their yard. But then you're able to quickly get something like an Ooze online or a Magus online. You know, and they, with Magus, they can't really do much unless they have a Firestorm. So you've got those, and you've also got K'Zool, although that's in this list here. I've since cut him. But if you land him against Dredge, they just can't do anything. They have to get a chain of vapor to address him. So Dredge is not that bad. The worst common matchups are like blue white control decks are typically a tough matchup. Storm decks and things like Burning Tendrils used to be unfavorable. Now it's closer to 50-50 because of Eidolon of the Great Revel. That's been a great card for those matchups, but it's still not an amazing. It's not a great matchup by any means. So it's not. You know, I don't think it's a. I don't play it because it's a. You know, I think it's the best deck. I play it because it's a very fun deck to play, and I think it has potential. So you know, it's definitely an option, and I actually do believe that it probably has the most powerful unpowered version of any deck out there.
Well, that's cool. So what is the best deck then?
I don't think you can say there's one best deck to play. You know, it's metagame dependent. I think you've got top decks in the Blue Angel decks, some Forge Master builds, some Burning Tendrils decks. I'd say those are probably the top, along with Bug and Rug. I think it's going to get shaken up a lot by Dak Faden coming, because there are going to be a lot more control flavor decks out there, and that's already what I'd call a top deck, or just under a top deck right now. And that gets more powerful with Dak. So I think that will really shake up the metagame. And I know a lot of people are excited about testing it. And that's actually one of the most important things I'd say about playing Vintage, is going to these events, is knowing the metagame and knowing the matchups that you're going to face, and being prepared to quickly identify those matchups and play the best game. And really, that's why I think one of the ways I'm able to excel in Vintage is just being able to quickly recognize you know, what deck I'm playing against, and play these decks that can kind of change roles pretty quickly. Going, you know, with Applejacks, for instance, if I've got a hand with Survival, I can go really quick aggro, or I can go to try to get some lock pieces in. And if I'm able to identify turn one what I'm playing against, the decision will be pretty easy. And in Vintage, it's a lot easier to identify now what you're playing against than in something like Classic, because, again, people aren't just brewing as much in Vintage. So I think that will change up quite a bit.
Yeah, well, this Applejacks deck is certainly a pretty deep toolbox of cards in it. You got a little bit of everything that you can search up through Survival. It's very cool.
So, I thought we got a question in our last podcast, and I thought it would be good to talk about, since we're talking about Vintage, Vintage Masters, all that sort of thing. This Anthony Bagashinsky asked if, having never played Classic or Vintage, this is a good time to get into it with VMA coming out. And I think we've done a partial job of answering it already. But
I really don't think there's going to be a better time than, you know, I'd say around two to three weeks after the Vintage Masters release. I mean, you're going to have so many of these cards flooding the market. And once it goes off print, as Zach and Andy have talked about, the prices are going to start to creep up again. And while I think, you know, Wizards will bring them back, you never know when that's going to be, and you never know for how long or for how short. This is really the best opportunity to buy in.
And if you're good at drafting, that's a big plus.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you guys look at these decks, one thing that's really kind of like crept up on me here, and it's starting to get more and more weird is, remember a couple years ago, a Vintage event, and yeah, I'm terrible about quoting event names and stuff like that, but do you guys remember when that little red-green aggro deck came on the scene, like out of nowhere? At one, like, some big event. I can't remember which one, but it was like this aggro deck out of nowhere. I think it had Mages of the Moon. It wasn't anywhere near, like, your deck. It wasn't, like, Survival or anything like that. But it was literally just, like, red-green aggro. And it started doing really well, and it won a tournament. And now you see, like, all these decks, like, running Hate Bears, and the second deck's running a bunch of creatures. The third deck, while it's mud, it's running a bunch of creatures. The fourth deck is also running a bunch of creatures. Do you think the death of combo is something that Classics kind of foreshadowed? Because look, there's not a lot of classic, a lot of combo out there.
Yeah, no, I think that that's definitely, you know, Classic did foreshadow a lot of the transition to creature heavy decks. I wouldn't say combo's dead though. You've still got Burning Tendrils and Burning Oath decks, which are very good. And you've still got Storm builds, which some, you know, there are some Storm pilots who are extremely good. And with those decks, again, or one thing, you know, one thing about those decks is they are very complicated to play in the sense that, you know, you've got so much consistency in a Vintage deck because you've got so many tutors, so many card drawing effects. You've got a lot of consistency and a lot of options and a lot of lines to play. So, you know, you might not see as many good performances out of a Burning Tendrils deck or a Doomsday deck, but a lot of that is because, you know, there aren't as many people playing them who are skilled enough to play them, I'd say. That's at least in Vintage.
That's an interesting perspective. I've seen some really, really good Storm players in Legacy, too. I totally agree with you. I think there are some really good ones out there. I'm talking about in paper, too. So I think they're out there. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I just... Yeah, the weird thing about Classic was, over all the years that it was out, granted not having those nine cards and having the fully powered basically stacks and dredge decks make it hard, but I find it hard to believe that outside of that Necro Gush or the Necro deck from back in the day, combos never really dominated Classic. Ever. Can you think of a time when combo was like number one dog?
No, it was just Necro Spike. Yeah, like you said,
no, Necro Spike. It was the ones that got banned. It was Necro Spike, and before that, it was Flash. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, and part of that's because, really, if you look at when Classic became, I'd say, more like Vintage, or at least in some ways to mimic some of the Vintage metagame, it was really ME4. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the release of Workshop. So you've got Workshop decks that really work well without power. And they really can punish, you know, Storm decks without power. I mean, if you're a combo deck, if you're a Storm deck playing against a Mun deck, you're trying to build up some board position, build up some mana, and then do something like Kirk them or Serenity them or whatever to give you that one turn you need. And that's not really something you can do with four Lotus Petals and four LEDs. You're not going to be building up a board presence of mana. Yes, you could go off, you know, you still have that trigger turn, but you can't really build the board presence like you can with real Moxen.
Gotcha. Well, I don't know. I mean, the hard part for me was that before Workshop was printed, you had ready access to four Lotus Petals and four Lion's Eye Diamonds and four Infernal Tutors and four Burning Wishes. And I just don't get it. Like, I mean, I think there's some kind of a real, like, I don't know. There's some kind of a piece that was always missing in the online world for combo. It's never been, like, just the best. And it's weird, because it's like the most powerful cards are usually not something with legs and power and toughness.
Yeah. Well, in Classic, it was Shops that ran it out. I mean, Shops was relatively prevalent.
But it didn't, yeah, really. It wasn't there before.
Yeah, but Dredge was there before, right? So you had Dredge, and that's just a better combo deck. I mean, Dredge is a combo deck, right?
If you want to, Dredge is the. It's funny you say that because I think Dredge is like the only deck that is literally the same. It doesn't matter which format you're playing. That is the 75 card carbon copy. At least I would play it like that. I'd play the same in Classic as I would in Vintage. I'm not playing Power in Dredge.
Well, yeah, but think about that.
then you're at a time, and you're at a time before some of the a lot of the better hate graveyard hate we have today. You know, you can't. You're competing with vintage. You know, people before ME4 even, you were competing with vintage dredge mm-hmm. when you played in classic.
Right. No, fair. That's fair. But the thing about that is too, and that's another weird kind of side conversation. Dredge doesn't win tournaments, even in classic. It really doesn't win tournaments. It's weird. It never really has either. I won a premier with it back in the day, and I won a league with it. But those are outliers. I mean, it doesn't. It usually gets in top eight, and then it falls somewhere in the top eight. And it's like that in paper too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it won world championships three years ago. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that. I don't think that it was. I think that it was still a lot better back in that period of time. Like, actually, I didn't play Classic back before really that much before ME4, so I don't remember were events even firing and were there Classic tournaments after between ME3 and ME4.
I mean, they fired not regularly. You know, it was like one of those things. And the thing that really got people excited about Classic again was It really was ME4. I mean, it got kind of stagnant after ME3. And it's like, all right, we got the next five duels. Now what? You know what I mean? Like, think about it from that perspective. ME3 had some good cards. That's pretty much it. You know what I mean? ME4 really brought it all together. It brought us, like, all the major archetypes except for the power. That's when we really all got enamored. Like, the best thing that ever happened was when they announced, and I'll never forget, so long ago, I still remember the day I read it. I'm sitting there at work, and I open this article, and they're like, hey, so you guys know, Mirage, Visions, and Weatherlight are coming to Magic Online. I'm like, what? I stopped way before these sets came out. Are they good? And that's how I got into Classic. I started talking to people. I looked at the old cards. I'm like, oh, that's cool. This is coming on. All right, cool. Then they announced MED1 with Force of Will. We were like, holy crap. But then we realized, dude, old classic was literally people playing freaking Hallowed Fountains and Watery Graves. And that was really hilarious. People were taking two all the time on turn one. It was bad.
Yeah, I remember reading articles about, like, Aggro Loam being top deck and everything. So Taiga was the big dual land to have.
I think the best deck in the original dual land days was a good legacy deck. It was Rug Delver.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that, Andy and Josh?
Which deck?
Do you remember the old Rug, but the Rug decks, the ones with Nimble Mongoose and Standstill and stuff?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Those were like the old top, like those decks and Dredge and he had some really random, like all these random decks just went away. You had like the Bombermans for a while with using LEDs and the Pyrite Spell Bomb that took forever to win with. And George made a deck that I love that was that...
Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
No, that was my deck. What was it? It was Trinket Mage and Tombstalkers. You guys remember that one?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Trinket Stalker. I like that deck. That deck was fun. But yeah, yep. I mean, look, the power level, it's amazing. How high the power level went when stuff like Oath got printed. Look, dude, we didn't have Oath for the longest time. I mean, that's weird. And then Oath came online, and it was like, wow. And the weird thing was, it was crappy in Vintage at the time. Like, no one played it anymore. It came out on Classic, and it was like, oh my god! But that's how we are now with power. It's funny how, like, everything kind of, like, comes back to the same thing, and we're finally not going to be the bastardized snows of the format. We're finally going to be actual...
The snows.
Yeah, those were my favorite Oath days, I'll say, because it was back in a time when, there wasn't really a clear, good answer to what the best Oath target was. You know, you didn't have Gristlebrand, you didn't have Emrakul, you didn't,
Terastrodon.
Even before Terastrodon, you know, you were using, like, Tidespout Tyrant and even Cognivore.
Mere Battlesphere. Like,
yeah, no, it was a good time, but now they've outclassed everybody. So,
thing is, they've printed such retarded creatures. Excuse my language, but just like Eldrazi is the stupidest idea. I love them, I play with them, but God, I mean, to cheat that, like, Channel Bam is ridiculous. I pay 15 life and I get the best creature you've ever seen in your life.
I don't know. And another
thing is, some Oath builds don't even play Emrakul now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most of the vintage ones are playing Grizzlebrand.
Yeah, Grizzlebrand's just taken over.
I don't know if that's better, though. Like, yeah, you get to draw cards.
It's a lot better. It's a lot better in vintage. I mean, usually a Grizzlebrand activation undisrupted, you're gonna win that turn.
Against Applejacks?
I said undisrupted. But yeah, if they've got a Null Rod on you, then you're in tough luck, or Magus, or
I just think it's a lot harder to beat an Emrakul than it is to beat a Grizzlebrand. I don't know why. I just have this feeling like, yeah, you can draw 7 cards and you can even draw 14 cards. But a 15-15 that has protection from spells that you either need a Jace or a Caracas for, or you need to overwhelm me?
Well, it's the Annihilator.
But that's the thing. You need, if you have a Jace or a Caracas, right, or just enough guys to attack through him, you're going to lose. Whereas Grizzlebrand, even if you have to pass the turn against a lot of decks, you'll gain 7 life when they crack back, or you'll draw 7 cards if they bounce it with Jace or Caracas or something like that. Yeah. So you've got a lot more value in those disrupted situations, and you've got an easy opportunity to win. I mean, 7 cards is quite a bit when you've got so many tutors and so much fast mana in your deck. Yeah, and you've got, Valky, so...
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. It's awesome to activate a Grizzlebrand. I have a soft spot for Emrakul, and I think he's stupid. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I'd say actually the second most popular Oath target right now is Sun Titan in Vintage.
Yeah, I read that today, actually.
What about good old Runescar Demon?
That's fallen out of favor because 7 cards is better. 14 cards is better than a tutor, usually. 7 to 4. But yeah, I mean, the Sun Titan, I've actually never played against the modern Sun Titan builds. I'd played against it back when people were playing it Classic. But it seems like an interesting deck. It's a little too dedicated to Valky for my taste, but, to each their own.
Well, that's going to be fun, man. It's all coming in 8 days. In 8 days, guys. That is a week from today. We're going to be recording, and we're going to be on the eve of glory. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
So are you guys going to be doing vintage videos? You should get a video series going.
For sure. Well, vintage drafting at first. The one thing I'm worried about is I think I'm just... How long is the set going to be out?
Till the Cons of Tarkir or whatever release.
When is? That's, do you know when that is? And like,
I think it's September.
September, okay. So I'm probably not going to be playing Vintage till like September.
But you're not going to wait that long. You're going to have drafted your set of power long before that.
So. We'll see, man. I'm not kidding when I say I'm not buying a piece of power. I'm literally drafting.
Yeah,
and
but
trading.
Are you gonna be passing power? I don't think so.
Passing it? No. But I gotta open that many. I don't care how many drafts you do. If it's 1 in 53 packs, that's 7 short of 60. So that's a ton of packs, dude. That's a lot of packs. That's per piece of power.
If you
and I
do like 130 drafts.
No, it's way more than that. Way more than that to get all 9. I was thinking about it. It's gonna be like 400 drafts. I mean, that's for 8. And that's if you get lucky and you don't get freaking Time Twister in between.
Wait, if you open about 450 packs, you've got a set of power 9. And you open 3 packs per draft, not 1 pack per draft. You're thinking 450 divided by 3 is 150.
Okay.
So 150 drafts.
But you have to get the right power. How many times am I going to open a Time Twister?
You're not gonna trade it? Yeah, I mean, like, on average, right?
I don't... that's another funny thing. That brings up another interesting point I won't get too deep into because I know how deep we are in the cast, but I don't know if I'm going to sell my power. I'll trade it for the power that I need. But then once I get...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you open 2 Lotuses, you can probably trade it for, Ancestral and a Pearl. It's not...
Ooh, I would love that deal. That would be awesome. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of Wheeler dealing, but yeah, look, dude, that's what I did in Med 3. I drafted, Med 4. I drafted all 40 duels over like 2 months of trading and drafting. So, I mean, it's doable. You can do it.
We're going to be streaming drafts on Twitch. Yeah. That'll be sweet.
Oh, yeah, and guys, just because I forgot to mention at the beginning, because I'm an idiot, please don't forget to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/YSOpodcast. Going to be getting more and more into the vintage scene, and we're trying to vary it up and bring some interesting stuff. But most importantly, we also give notifications on when we are streaming Vintage Masters drafts. So, with that, Adrian, thank you so much for being on this week, man. It was a heck of a time.
Thanks for having me. Great time.
As always.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, Adrian.
As always, we want to thank our hosts and our sponsors, PureMTGO.com and MTGOTraders.com. And one more week, guys. One more show. One more glorious goodbye to Classic. Kind of. We haven't really been giving it much attention. And, yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, I was going to actually, before we go there, we may want to mention that the Invitational is actually this Sunday, which I believe Josh and I are both participating in. So I believe that Zerbus and Enderfall are going to be streaming it on Twitch. So you guys want to check that out if you're into watching the finale of Classic. This is it. The last event ever.
Well, good luck, Josh.
Thanks, man.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks for the well wishes.
I love you, Andy. I know you'll do well. Good luck.
All right, guys. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks.